Path to Unconditional Love, Chapter 21, A Long Walk with the Teacher. Not only did the teacher like long walks, but he also preferred to live close to nature, in mountain caves, huts, in the forest, or by the river. So sometimes, to meet him, it was often necessary to travel long distances. We were looking forward to a new opportunity to meet the teacher when we went on a pilgrimage to places of power. All of us, the creative group members, were pleased about what was to come, tuning in for a new meeting with him. Serena and I were looking forward to this trip with special excitement, because it was in fact our first opportunity to get to know the teacher from another side. To touch his wisdom, to feel connected to him. But at the same time, there was an inherent fear in me that I might not be able to cope with the load. As I heard about how fast the teacher walked on mountain paths, and I knew very well my tendency to sudden faint and was afraid to become a burden. But I could not miss this chance, so I did not open to my sisters, but only found the strength to share my fears with my brother Agni, who led our trek. "I want very much to go with you, but I'm also afraid."
"Why is that?"
Agni was surprised. "I may pass out somewhere on the road, on a critical part of the way. I'm afraid to bother others, to become a burden to you. I would hate to do that."
"Come on,"
Agni said, as if it was something unimportant, not worth bothering about. "All our illnesses are caused by the wrong life in the city. If you go to places of power more often and walk in the wild, you will notice how your health will be restored. Looking further ahead, I will say that this is what happened. During our expedition, I never fainted or had a headache once. And later, I forgot that this had once been a real problem in my daily life." To meet the teacher, we had to go to a special sacred place in the wild where he lived. It was located in the village Orekhovo, near the city of Sochi, where we had to get from our house in jeeps. We set out early in the morning, before sunrise. The trip did not take long. Very soon, we stopped at the top of the majestic Orekhovsky waterfall. The crystal clear water fell down a huge, almost vertical cliff, forming a small pool at the mountain's foot. After admiring the waterfall, we followed a mountain path that ran between a cliff on one side and a precipice on the other. The path was relatively narrow, perhaps a meter and a half wide. There were no fences, of course. I had to keep my concentration in order not to fall off to where the blue and white strip of the Sochi River glittered 30 meters below. So we reached the Sochi's confluence with its tributary, the Agva River, continuing straight along with it. It was very hot, and the water in the river was warm, and it pleasantly cooled my feet, which were hot from walking. Agni's brother, the very young man who had made everyone laugh at the sans theater classes, was getting quite a fast pace, and to keep up, I tried to switch off my mind's control over my body completely. I learned this at the retreat, where I had the opportunity to walk along the course of a mountain river. The experience gained was now very useful. Moving along the picturesque gorge, we reached the confluence of the Agva with the Svadinse stream, and then went along the stream, along which there were several beautiful waterfalls, Some of them were quite small, about 1.5 meters high. Others reached more than 10 meters height. The teacher met us near one of these beautiful waterfalls. He lived here in a hut, alone, for miles around. There were no tourists, stairs, descents, or fences here built for tourism. The sage was waiting in the clearing, hands clasped behind his back, gazing thoughtfully in the distance. When he saw us, he greeted us with a namaste gesture.
Namaste, teacher,
we said, standing around him in awe, ready to listen to his wisdom.
Namaste, brothers and sisters,
the teacher said, looking around at us.
Today, we are going to have a long walk to the places of power, and I suggest we start right now. Tune in to your upcoming trip. You must follow me in silence, taking in as many impressions as possible of all that is around you. Nature is a temple. It will purify your soul and body and bring you closer to God. Remember that impressions are the food for our soul, and what we feed it with is what it will be. So he led the way, and we all followed him along the stream.
I constantly had to control myself to stop the flow of thoughts that kept rushing through my head and prevented me from seeing the wonderful landscapes, listening to the water's murmur and singing birds, and feeling the pleasant aroma of nature. I was once again convinced of how much the mind prevented me from being in reality, always leading me into daydreaming. Several times, I found myself coming out of my meditative state and slipping back into the haunting thoughts. It was only when I made an effort that I returned to the here and now, to consciousness, to a sense to the fullness of each moment I lived. The teacher often imparted the knowledge on the move, walking along mountain paths and gorges, admiring the majestic waterfalls, bathing in icy rivers. He did not like statics. Every class was filled with intensity. The teacher shared his wisdom to the waterfall sound, climbing up steep mountain tracks, descending into deep gorges. Although I had heard about it, it was still unnatural for me to experience in practice how fast he moved. What amazing stamina and physical strength he possessed, having a seemingly ordinary physique. The teacher was stronger and more enduring than the trained young guys who had to make an effort to keep up during the teaching walks. Not to mention me, despite the fact that I had recently got rid of mountain's fear during the retreat, I still moved along the mountain tracks quite carefully and not in the fast rhythm the others were used to. Sometimes I fell behind and had to make an effort to catch up with the group. The trip was far from an easy walking tour. We had to jump over rocks, climb over thickets of bushes, descend into deep ravines, and climb up steep slopes. Enduring one of the moments when I was walking behind the main group and trying not to fall, getting over trees felled by the wind, I heard his voice, amplified by the mountain echo. It was like an alarm bell. There was a fantastic strength in it, but at the same time, an aching longing, powerful, spiritual anguish.
Who will understand me? Who will hear me?
The frantic cry flew over the mountains.
Who will understand me?
Startled, I froze in place and looked down at where the teacher was still moving with the rest of the students. He must be talking to someone who has been in the group for a long time, I thought then. Maybe he's scolding them so they'll understand the truth better. But at that moment, something happened that made me break out in a cold sweat. It was so exciting and so unexpected. The teacher suddenly turned in my direction and shouted again.
Who will hear me? Who will understand?
This time, there was a hint of hope in his voice. He was looking at me, even though I was at a reasonable distance behind. I could almost feel his eyes on me. Does he think that it is me? That it is me who will hear him and understand? Does the teacher count on me? The newcomer? The one who has only recently set foot on this path? And at that moment, I felt connected to the teacher. It happened so naturally and so quickly. I had a clear understanding that if I could not understand and hear, there would be no one for him to pass on his wisdom to. Who else if not me? This state was akin to a revelation, a robust understanding. And then I straightened up and confidently stepped over the fallen trunks, not looking where my feet were going, climbing over the tangled vines without even thinking about how I did it. I went ahead without hesitation, jumped down the hill, and caught up with our group in just a few minutes so that I could listen to every word of the teacher and not miss a single grain of the knowledge. From that moment on, even the fastest pace of the hike, I never fell behind the group again, because I felt an incredible responsibility. The teacher believed in me and hoped for me. I just could not let him down. After a while, we made a stop at the foot of a majestic, almost vertical cliff. Two of our guys, Andrei and Alexander, decided to organize a competition and see who could climb higher on the vertical surface. The teacher did not interfere with them, but watched the action with interest, as well as everyone else. When the young men reached the middle of the cliff, they saw how high they had climbed and how scary it was to go down. Going down is always harder than going up, and now they were in a difficult situation. It was still a long way to the top of the mountain, and it was already hazardous and scary to go down. The mountain is a trap, the teacher explained, turning to us. It has already caught a lot of such arrogant people. What do you mean, caught? How can a mountain catch someone? Serena asked, standing very close to the sage. It can, that is for sure. The teacher smiled. There are many illusions and deceptions in this world, so do not be deceived by anything especially by yourself. People are captured because of their own pride. They want to prove their own importance to themselves and others. They cannot look at the situation consciously and get rid of illusions in time. He nodded at the young men who were frozen on the rock, unable to move up or down. They were still in a state of indecision. Try to be more cautious and take blessing of wise people for everything, so as not to get into trouble. Later, I was repeatedly convinced of the truth of the words. For a long time, I worked with the mail that the teacher got. I looked through it and saw thousands of letters where people explain how they had fallen into hands of scammers. They could have the teacher's blessing, ask for advice beforehand, and avoid trouble. But arrogance and self-deception prevented them from asking for advice in time and being saved. With difficulty, Andrei and Alexander descended from the cliff, having experienced many unpleasant moments. They were annoyed and angry with themselves, realizing their mistake too late. After resting at a rest point, we set off again and reached the foot of another gorgeous waterfall. The water flowed down here from the rock in a rapid stream, forming a small pool with a strong current, which we had to cross by swimming. This section of the gorge was quite dangerous. If the water level was too high, swimming was the only way to cross the pool. At the same time, a strong stream would carry you away and almost did not allow you to move forward. In addition, the matter was complicated by the fact that we had things with us. Dishes, some food, mats for meditation, and clothes. We were not willing to wet these things. That was where the tire, which the brothers had been carefully carrying with them all the way, came in handy. They tied a rope to it, swam across the pool first, and threw the tire to us. Holding it on the other side by the rope, all our belongings were placed on the tire, and those who did not swim well also held onto it, and they were pulled across the stream with the help of the rope. And so we felt like a united team, and easily overcame this difficult section of the gorge, since not everyone could make it alone and swim against a strong stream. Once at the river bank, we went along the 30-meter-high walls of the gorge, which went up in picturesque layers. One look upwards filled us with awe of the majestic creation of nature. The gorge gradually narrowed until it was about 3 meters wide, and then the stone walls suddenly parted, and we were near another waterfall, probably the most beautiful one we had seen today. The water fell from a great height, shimmering and glittering in the sunlight like expensive diamonds. And at the foot of the waterfall was a clear blue lake. The water in this lake is healing. The teacher said, "You can swim here, and you will be able to heal from all your illnesses." Many of those who swam here during the last pilgrimage easily overcame all their diseases and ailments. Exhausted by the heat and the long walk, we left our belongings on the banks, undressed, and plunged into the water. with pleasure.
It was pleasantly cold to the skin. It was invigorated and energizing. I felt the weariness go away and the strength in my body awaken. I wanted to move. I wanted to smile. I wanted to sing and dance. I wanted to live in every moment, to enjoy every second. When I got to the shore, I felt refreshed, as if I had not traveled many kilometers under the scorching summer sun. It was as if we were just starting out. After bathing, we went further and saw a grave with the inscription, "Died in the crossing."
"That's strange," said Serena. "How could have he died when the river is so shallow that it barely reaches the ankles?"
"It is like this now, when there is no rain," explained the teacher. "But during the rainy season, the river can become 20 meters deep in a narrow place. Look how smooth and polished the walls are in the gorge that we just passed." We looked back and saw, indeed, how high the torrents of water polished the walls. Besides, when it rains, the water rolls huge boulders and carries large tree trunks like matches, sweeping everything in its path. The teacher continued, "In this case, it is better not to cross the river and wait until the water subsides." I remember the first time my group and I crossed the river during the retreat. Then, under the mentor's guidance, we joined hands, which helped us all to make a difficult crossing without losses. Later, while traveling to places of power with the teacher, I often saw small streams turn into roaring torrents of water during a downpour, washing away everything in their path. Once, when the rain was not very heavy, but still the water in the Agva rose quite high, we crossed a small wooden bridge over the river. A herd of cows came with us. First, the bull crossed the Agva, then the cows, and only a small calf was unlucky. He was washed away by the stream and carried to the confluence of the Agva with the Sochi. The Sochi River was 3 or 4 times as wide and full-flowing as the Agva. The calf mooed desperately and began to sink. It was covered by the raging streams of the river, and it seemed it had come to an end. I was so sorry for this little immature calf. I wanted to help him, but I didn't even know how to do it. I just stood on the bridge, with my hand over my heart, and watched with bated breath as the elements carried him right on the sharp rocks. But then, a real miracle happened. The teacher raised his hand, and the calf suddenly caught on something in the water and jumped out onto the bank. It was so incredible, as if someone had picked him up and pulled him to the shore. Goosebumps ran through my body. The calf was safe on the bank, having had no chance of escape a moment before. To say that I was dumbfounded is an understatement. I was staring in amazement at the teacher and the poor animal, not yet fully believing that all this was really happening. "But how? Teacher, you did it?
Didn't you?
I exclaimed at last, to which he bowed his head and nodded modestly. Yes, I...
This is unbelievable! And can other people develop such superpowers?
I asked the teacher, so that they could help all the living things?
All superpowers belong to God, replied the teacher. But man is also God. God separated a tiny part from himself, and so man and all living things appeared. He separates it, robes it in the nirvanic body that prevents it from merging with God again. This part of God, or Atman, is also very powerful. One of them created the Big Bang 13 billion years ago and formed our meta-galaxy, becoming its God. This is the power of Atman, and this power lies in each of us.
It's amazing! I exclaimed. So God is not one, but there is also a God of the meta-galaxy?
Yes, and although such meta-galaxies are innumerable, the God of our meta-galaxy guides us. There is a whole hierarchy of gods. There is also the God of Bwagiriya, our galaxy, and the God of Helionia, our solar system.
Do the planets have their own gods too? I asked with growing interest.
Yes, of course. The teacher smiled. The planets were named after the gods for a reason. Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Mars, Venus. Previously, people knew this well and were able to turn to these gods, finding their help. Hence appeared astrology, which shows the influence of these gods on our lives. The influence of astrology, karma, and past lives is found in the causal body of a person. And because we are at the bottom of this hierarchy, this body limits the powers of our soul.
But this influence, it can be used, right?
Yes, knowing astrology and being able to address the gods. In this case, we can find the moment when the necessary powers and abilities are revealed in us.
But how can it be done, teacher?
I asked again, trying to get to the heart of what he was trying to convey. After all, man has other bodies, as far as I understand, such as the mental one, which restricts us even more. If a person was clothed only in the nirvanic and causal bodies, he would be an Arhangel, and thus would have great powers. But, as he correctly pointed out, people also have a mental body, that is, a body of thoughts. Weak thoughts turn a person into nothing, and strong thoughts make him a magician. But the trouble with a person is that they don't own their minds, and are slaves to the worldview that society has instilled in them. The more stupid people are, the more intelligent they think they are. And, of course, in this state, they cannot get smarter.
Then how to become smarter? I asked.
To do this, you need to study, observe, and know yourself. At first, this process will be hindered by laziness and lack of concentration. A person will fall asleep in their thoughts. But if they have perseverance, then they will soon be terrified by themselves
Everything in a person is not as it should be. They were crippled from childhood by upbringing. And when they realize this, they will feel remorse. They will also see the plight of other beings, and they will feel compassion for them. Then they will understand that they cannot live without the help of higher forces, and love and hope for God will arise in them. And most importantly, they will separate their Atman from the body, feelings, and mind. And if they are aware of themselves as Atman, this will lead them to enlightenment. It all starts with concentration. So it is said, wisdom is concentration. Concentration is wisdom. Therefore, all magic depends on the ability to concentrate your attention.
Teacher, what about the astral and vital bodies? Do they also limit the possibilities of Atman?
If man had only the nirvanic, causal, and mental bodies, he would be an angel. But he also has an astral body. This is a body of exalted emotions. And if it is developed, the person will be a holy saint. It also limits the possibilities of Atman. Next comes the vital body, the lower emotions, the animal instincts. And if the other bodies are not developed, and there is no physical body, then such a being will be a demon, an evil spirit. If the astral body is developed and dominates the vital, he will be a good spirit. Next comes the etheric body. The spirits, called poltergeist, have it. These creatures can act on a physical level. Also, the etheric body is the energy basis for the physical body's action. It is what gives life to it. It contains energy channels that represent the electrics of the physical body. So with each new body, the powers of Atman decrease? Am I right? I asked carefully.
That's right, said the teacher. And when there is a physical body, the abilities of Atman are already completely absent. To regain them, it is necessary to overcome the blockages of the physical body and release the energy of the etheric body from it. Then it can separate from the flesh and receive divine power.
And how can it be done?
First of all, with the help of sexual energy, which should be saved and not spent, so that there is energy for magic. To do this, you need to be ascetic or a tantric, who does not allow orgasm and retains this powerful energy.
And what happens to all our bodies when a person dies?
When a person dies, they immediately leave their physical body. After 9 days, they leave the etheric body. And after 40 days, the vital body. At the same time, they gain many powers and abilities. They were blocked by these bodies. Therefore, shamans and ancient people turn to the souls of the dead for help and protection.
Do animals and plants also have Atman?
Yes, they do. But in insects, plants, and animals, the physical bodies also limit the powers of their Atman. But since they have no personality,
They have great telepathic powers. They can foresee earthquakes and so on. For example, rats escape from a ship that is about to sink. Personality is person's invention about themselves, which was imposed by society. People think about themselves. I am German, Russian, rich, poor, a communist, a Christian. And all these ideas prevent them from feeling as subtle as animals can. Therefore, it is necessary to erase personal history, not to immerse yourself in imagination, in thoughts about yourselves. All this makes a person weak and insensitive, turns them into robots. If you control your imagination, you can materialize thoughts, and this will be a real magic. Later, this knowledge opened up more to me in detail, and by a happy coincidence, the darshan with the teacher's voice still exists, and everyone has the opportunity to touch the wisdom of the teacher at first hand. Moving against the river stream, we turned to the left bank and came to an amazing place, a stone garden. All around, at some distance from each other, large blocks of stone grew out from this ground, covered with thick moss. This is a UFO station, the teacher explained to us. Sit down next to one of these blocks, get into a meditative state, and you will be able to receive a message from the aliens.
When I heard the teacher's words, my mind immediately reacted with rejection. We were all so used to thinking that there were no aliens, that if someone said otherwise, their words were usually taken as a joke, fiction, or the ravings of a madman. We were taught from childhood that humans are the only intelligent beings in the universe. So many people find it so difficult to believe that aliens are no less real than representatives of humanity.
If there are UFOs and extraterrestrials, why don't they communicate with Earthlings and make life better on Earth? I asked, carefully.
The fact is that there is a big experiment going on Earth. Its goal is to make a Superman out of the animals. The teacher replied, at a certain point, extraterrestrials appear among people and give an impetus to their development, which was reflected in the Bible and other ancient books. We see the pyramids and other structures that they built to bring down to Earth the cosmic energy necessary for development. Often, extraterrestrials appear after a cataclysm such as a flood, a large volcanic eruption, or a meteorite fall, after which almost nothing remains of the civilization. But they help the most spiritual people to survive, as it was with Noah, so that these best people will give birth to spiritual and more sensible people. Yet the wicked, the selfish, the shallow, are destroyed. Then the aliens leave and watch from the side what people are doing, since development requires periods of independence, the manifestation of free will. Otherwise, they will not be a Superman, but a super robot. But telepathically, the aliens still guide the development
of the worthiest.
Teacher, and what do you think about the near end of the world? Is it expected any time soon? I venture to ask. When I was at the retreat, the mentors and I saw a message in the sky. It said that people need to come to their senses, that death is near.
Yes, a new Armageddon is expected very soon. The earth will go up in flames. Only a very small number of the best people will remain, and then the aliens will again be among us. They will help to restore life on earth. Those who follow the spiritual path will remain among the people. And first of all, it is you, my students. You are the light of the world, the sun of humanity. But the spiritual path is not simple. The dark ones never rest, and they lead the weakest astray, as was the case with Judas Iscariot. And such a former disciple falls into the abyss. He becomes worse even than ordinary people, because he succumbed to the devil. Pray that you will avoid this sad fate. The demons are not asleep. Their task is to blacken all that is good and holy with slander, to trample in mud all that is most sensible and spiritual, in order to keep as many people as possible away from the light and to plunge them into darkness. Your task is to save as many souls of light as possible from this darkness. Those who are not susceptible to lies and slander, because their hearts are open and they know where the truth is.
The teacher's explanation looked fantastic at first glance. But I myself had already witnessed many miracles, such as signs and messages in the sky. And I felt that every word the teacher said was true. His words were still ringing in my head when I sat down by a huge moss-covered rock, closed my eyes, and tuned in to the alien's message. And suddenly, I saw, with my spiritual vision, a huge flying saucer above me. Energy spheres were slowly falling from it, and one of them entered my head. And at that moment, I had a strange feeling, as if I had read an entire book in one moment. Knowledge appeared in me in the form of a new state, in which I began to see everything differently. It was a special emotion that revealed a whole new reality to me. I realized that gaining knowledge is not information, but a new state, primarily in the emotional center, which opens up a new vision. It is like love. When it comes, you see things differently, but it is impossible to explain love in words. It only has to be experienced.
Moving further along the river, we came to a place where the gorgeous walls converged very closely, and a giant rock blocked this narrow passage, and the water below flowed around it.
It is a keeper's stone, the teacher explained. There is an entrance to a parallel world and the gorge behind it. The men quickly climbed up on this rock and helped everyone to get into the gorge behind it with a rope. It was dark in the gorge, and the water rumbled beneath our feet as it ran over the polished pebble stones. Moving along the gorge, I felt that I was walking in two worlds at once, on the earth and in some other world, a cosmic one. I began to see strange spheres of various sizes flying around, multicolored spirals screwing into space, zigzag lines floating everywhere, images of different galaxies, amazing planets inhabited by unusual animals began to appear. But suddenly, before me appeared the huge face of a strange creature, which stared at me sternly. It spoke in a very low, thunder-like voice.
"You are entering the land of Agartha."
Its lips spoke up.
"But it is too early for you. Go back."
And then all was gone, and I saw the gorge again, and the river running over the rocks under my feet. I could not move for a while, coming to my senses. This new experience impressed me so much that I saw this face that could not be described in words for a long time before my eyes. An inhuman, thunderous voice roared in my ears. Unbelievable! In such a short time, I was able to receive a message from the aliens, and now I almost got into a parallel world! And all this was not a fiction, but the true reality! When we moved on to the upper reaches of the Agva River, I asked the teacher, "You say that we are gods, and Christ said the same thing in the Gospel. But why do I not feel like a god, but feel like a body and a stupid false personality, or rather, a whole set of these false personalities?" "It is because your god is hidden by 7 layers of bodies. Now it is asleep, identified with everything around it, with every thought, emotion, feeling, with the body, clothes, car, apartment, family, and so on. And because of the sleepiness, identification, and attachment, it cannot realize who it is." "How can it do so? I mean, how can I recall myself, recall my essence?" I asked. "That's what meditation is for. All that is left of God now is attention. Therefore, you need to calm down and become aware of your attention, to make sure that it is not identified with anything, and to begin going to the source of this attention, that is, to the God that you are. This is a long way, as the attention is highly entangled in attachment. There is no will, concentration. Everything distracts and puts you to sleep, but you need to wake up and watch your attention, look for its source. This is what meditation is." We stopped on the banks of the Agva, where there was a beautiful view of the river. The teacher suggested sitting here and meditating.
Straighten your spine and be calm and relaxed. Feel your breath and attention directed at it. Try to clearly feel the beam of your attention and the place where this beam comes from. Attention became a beam of light that illuminated what it was directed at. The rest had ceased to exist for me. The beam seemed to come from the head, or from the space behind the head. But the constant train of thoughts made it difficult to feel all this well. I had to carefully control my body and breath so that this train of thoughts and images did not take me into a state of sleep, of identification with them. Try to remember this awakened state of consciousness. The teacher said when the meditation was over, "And now, when we go further, keep it in motion, and those who already know how to do this, let them make a holy effort and feel the divine power over their heads. Try to feel the energy descend on you and transform your whole being. With this holy effort, attention goes in three directions: outward, inward, and upward to God. That is, to God and the source of attention, and outward, say to the breath, or to what we see or hear in these directions. Continuing our pilgrimage, we reached the next waterfall, under which there was a large, deep lake. The man and woman began to climb to the top of the waterfall and jump from it into the lake. I climbed to the top with the others and looked down. The waterfall was at least 10 meters high. When I imagined myself lying down a steep, rocky slope, I felt dizzy. What happens if I push off badly and fall right on the rocks? What if I hit the water hard and drown? When my turn came, I paused at the top, hesitating, gathering my courage. Of course, I coped with the fear of mountains, and now I could perfectly climb gorges, go down and up steep tracks. But here it was different. To push off and fly in free fall for 10 meters? I was not ready for this yet. Seeing my hesitation, everyone around me started cheering me on. "Jump!" they shouted. "Jump! You can do it! Come on, it's not scary at all!" I heard all those shouts and words of support, but they did not help at all in this situation. The fear was much stronger. It paralyzed my will, and no matter how much I gathered my courage, I could not take the decisive step. Frustrated by my cowardice, I went to the teacher, who was standing nearby and watching the moment of my shame. "Is it probably too bad that I couldn't jump?" I asked him.
"It is not good, but it is not bad either," the teacher said calmly. "The main thing is to observe yourself, to see all the processes, thoughts, emotions that occur in you in this situation. The main thing is to use each situation as a spiritual practice for your growth and development, without identifying with anything inside, neither with thoughts, nor with emotions, nor with the body, freeing your Atman from these attachments. Well, outwardly, play a role appropriate to the situation,
The game also helps you not to be identified and to be awake. And this is the most important thing. Not getting an A or B in this life from the position of the social worldview and social patterns. Then I saw that I was completely asleep in my fears and assessments and completely forgot to study myself and not to identify. Indeed, I judged my behavior only in terms of social appeal. I was worried, upset that I was weak and could not jump. I identified myself with my behavior. But even from such a seemingly ugly situation, it was possible and necessary to learn lessons of wisdom. And with his words, the teacher helped me return to consciousness. Later, when we had made an evening stop and were sitting around a cozy crackling fire, Serena decided to share her story with everyone. "I want to tell you how I overcame my fear of diving," she said. "May I?"
"Of course," the teacher replied and sent the girl a look of support. "I think everyone will be interested, won't they?" There were cheers from all sides, and then Serena took a deep breath and began to tell the story.
It was at one of the seminars when we went for a walk to the waterfalls with a group. We were walking about the same place as we are now, only the other side of the river. I clearly remembered the first time I was standing on top of a cliff and getting ready. The water thundered down from an 8-meter height, creating clouds of splashes. So that it was impossible to see exactly where to jump, where the waterfall ended and the pond began. The mentor advised me to cover my ears with grass or leaves from trees, so that when I was suddenly submerged in water, my eardrums would not break. Of all the sadhaks present in the group, the men raced to the edge of the cliff and threw themselves down. The woman, except for me, stood aside, preferring to look at the scenery. What could be more beautiful than the ancient Caucasus Mountains? The bright sun was high above the horizon. The air was so clear and transparent that it seemed to ring like a string, and you could hear all your thoughts, cool mountain rivers that washed away all your sorrows and worries. Serena was a great storyteller. She so beautifully described nature that all of these pictures literally popped up before my eyes. Her strong, clear voice bubbled like that clear mountain stream, making everyone listen with interest to every word. And 6 months before this moment, I learned that the teacher likes to walk and swim. The girl cast a gentle glance at the teacher and smiled. And when he swims, he jumps down from the waterfall. Then I decided for myself that I must learn to jump into the water. I don't know why. And that's why I even signed up for the swimming pool. I went there with my mother. She wanted to improve her health and thought that I went there to find myself a sportsman. And I would climb to the highest diving tower, look down, shake with fear, close my eyes and fall from a 5-meter height. And now, as I stood at the top of the waterfall and prepared to jump, I thought I was close to my goal. Who has not jumped probably just has not dreamed, or has not yet made up their mind. I listened curiously to Serena's story, and remembered myself, standing on the top like this today and wanting to do it, to jump, to merge for a moment with the thundering torrent, to plunge into its splashes. And how terrifying it was to take this same step. In contrast to me, Serena approached this issue more purposefully. She regularly practiced in the pool to learn how to jump, while I just tried to overcome myself, unsuccessfully so far. "The worst thing is to take a step," Serena continued. "I knew I wasn't going to die, that I would be fine. But the fear of the unknown is so frightening. Though it costs absolutely nothing, as it turns out. Just a millisecond. I decide, and I fall down. I don't remember anything. Just a splash of water, a breath of air, and the joy and laughter of my sisters congratulating me on my jump. There were cheers all around. "Fear is just a defensive reaction of our physical body," commented the teacher. "It protects us not only from real threats, but also from imaginary, illusory ones. When you stop identifying yourself with your fear, your emotions, your experiences, everything appears in a different light." "Our walk continued," Serena said. "My hair and clothes got dry, and the sun rays caressed my face and body. Now we were walking along the picturesque bank of a small mountain river. The water was so clear that colorful stones could be seen through it. In some places, they formed rapids, and the water created small waterfalls. We admired the rainbows that shimmered in them. And then the mentor stopped and said mysteriously, 'See these little waterfalls? Priestesses like to bathe in them when they walk here with the teacher. If you stop now, you will be able to hear their ringing laughter among the noise of the water. It rings like a bell.' It was something incredible to imagine these unearthly creatures splashing and frolicking here. It seemed to me then that the priestesses were an order of some sort, that they all wear black robes with hoods. Following the teacher, they go in a line under the arches of the mysterious cave to the main crystal, stand around it, and pray for the whole world." Then I thought, "Oh, this is definitely not my place. I don't know how to pray for the whole world. It must be very responsible." I didn't know then that within a month I would be swimming merrily in these waterfalls and hurrying along the track after my teacher, listening to the joyous voices of the new Sathaks, without being noticed from the other side of the river. Only he could have known about this. Serena paused, then looked back at the teacher. His face was lit up with the bright and slightly mysterious smile of a sage who knew in advance what would happen. At this moment, I remembered myself a year ago when we were on vacation in Anapa, and I suddenly ran away fooling around from a steep slope, attracting the attention of all the tourists and laughing fervently. I remembered making a wish near a huge boulder to come back here. Now I clearly understood that my anticipations had not deceived me and that the wish I had made then had been fulfilled. Just a year later, I returned to the Caucasus. Unbelievable! I was sitting next to the teacher himself! And here, I was thrilled. During our dynamic walks with the teacher and conversations with the waterfall's noise, he answered numerous questions and willingly shared his wisdom. His answers helped to know the truth. They were like a drink of fresh, crystal clear water from the mountain lakes in which we bathed. We all knew that we had been given a unique opportunity to learn wisdom with the enlightened one. The mentors would say that this opportunity was not available to everyone, and only a few students got it. Although the teacher was ready to share knowledge generously, not everyone was ready to accept it. Even those who had already embarked on the path of spiritual development.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website, www.amazonone.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.